Hey, Lizzie, I have a story for you. It has a childhood bond, a life-changing medical mystery, and a 16-year journey to find answers. It's a misconnection.
Welcome to Misconnections. We are both Elizabeth. I'm Elizabeth Villa, aka Lizzie.
And I'm Elizabeth Windham, aka Beth.
Misconnections is a podcast that explores the longing to connect and the circumstances that stand in our way.
Each episode will bring a true story of a missed connection and an expert guest to help us unpack it so that we all can get better at making real, meaningful connections that feel good to us.
That's why we started this show. After a series of our own misconnections in dating, friendships, and family relationships, we decided to get some help.
So, Lizzie, are you ready to hear this misconnection story?
I'm ready, Beth.
Okay, without further ado, here's the story.
I mean, I've always known you, haven't I? The same way all of us know our bodies. Even before I had words, I had you. Or maybe it's more accurate to say that you had me. Me the content, you the container. We met at the threshold of existence. You sent signals, I made sense. Our interactions, a web of awareness and lack and affection and warmth and hunger and satisfaction and fear. Me, this animated mind. You, this intuitive body. We grew up together, tangled some of the time, braided others, even distant at points. You produced awareness, I articulated. You churned my gut, I changed my behavior. I decided, you acted. Our relationship was in concert as we worked together as one, signaling to each other clearly and precisely in a smooth loop that guided me through the world. I remember placing my small hand in the glowing red coils of an oven burner as I reached across the stovetop for a bowl. That's when I learned you had the power to command my actions. I remember holding my breath underwater for so long that my lungs burned and it felt like I might explode. That's when I learned I had some measure of control over you. I remember when the boy with brown hair kissed me under the streetlight. That's when I learned you could ferry me someplace golden. I remember when I refused to give the man a ride home from the late night lecture. That's when I learned you could keep me safe. I made sense of your sensations. You made movement from my thoughts. We had a good thing going. So what happened? When the pain started that cold January morning, years and years ago, it felt as though an ache like a bruise was spreading across the left side of my head. You sent a signal that I couldn't read, a corrupt file I would never be able to open. I've learned that happens sometimes. The pain was peculiar, unlike any sensation I had ever felt. There was no precedent for the way it simmered and stuck and spread. And I had no idea how to make it stop. Nothing like this had ever happened to me before. Nothing like this had ever happened between us before. Until this point, we had experienced pain the same way most people in their bodies do, in fleeting moments anchored to a direct cause. Pain had always been circumstantial. It was acute. When it arrived, it did so as one piece of a much larger picture. I could draw a line between action and consequence. These actions produced noble pains in my body. You told me what the pain signified, so I never had to search for meaning. And most importantly, at a certain point, the pain would always subside. There was always an end. You would right yourself, and once again, stasis restored, your ordinary function would resume. But this time was different. What began that morning as a deep, dull ache gnarled itself into a tender knot of wounds. I went to the hospital expecting a diagnosis, followed by a treatment plan. I wanted relief. I wanted you to tell me what was wrong, to tell me what I needed to know. I wanted you to be simplified into an explanation, deduced to a line of numbers and letters that could be easily defined. I sought assurance from someone whose job it was to know how bodies work, someone who'd tell me that you would be just fine. But you weren't fine, and you haven't been since. That was 16 years ago, and I'm not sure that we will ever be fine again. Here's the thing. There was no injury, illness, or infection. There was no inciting incident. There was no trauma, no allergy. But regardless of this unknown origin, the result remains the same. You signaled pain that cold January morning, and that pain has festered, opportunistic and malleable, embedding itself into my bones, curling around my increasingly stiff muscles, nestling alongside my worn tendons. You worked until you didn't. We were allies until we weren't. I used to rely on you. Now I worry about you. You used to pull me forward into adventure and risk and challenge. Now you guide me to the physical therapist, to the doctor, to the couch to rest. I used to think you would protect me. Now I'm forced to protect myself from you. If I'm being honest, I've lost my confidence in you. I don't trust you to recover, to regenerate, to welcome. You keep breaking down in unfamiliar and unexpected ways, with each disintegration compounding on the last. You've broken my hope. You've replaced my determination with doubt. You've dismantled me, piece by piece, from the inside out. I don't like thinking about how we were once connected and now we're estranged. Estranged, but not exactly strangers either. Because through it all, we're still in this together. I mean, I'll always know you, right? Even with the pain, you're mine and I'm yours. Me, this intuitive mind, you, this animated body.
I feel like we need to take a deep breath, Beth.
Yes. For real. A couple moments.
Yeah.
How are you feeling after hearing this story?
You know, usually when I hear these stories, I feel them very emotionally. And I feel this certainly very emotionally. But as I was listening to the story, I noticed that in addition to feeling the very big emotions of this story, I really felt storyteller's words in my body, which makes a lot of sense because of this misconnection being with the storyteller and her body. She uses such incredible detail here. And even though I can feel so much of it in my body, I still can't imagine the pain that she's dealing with and has been dealing with for so long. And I also noticed that as I was listening and I started to feel the story really sit in my body, that I started to want to think about other things. Like I really, really wanted to pull myself out of that, kind of disconnect from the story because it feels like an impossible circumstance. Yeah. And I know that we maybe relate to impossible circumstances with our bodies in different ways, maybe on a smaller scale, larger scale, or just different. And listening to our storyteller's story here, I guess I'm just sitting here feeling really struck by her strength. Mm-hmm. The layers here are really intense, and so we're going to talk about that in our conversation. But yeah, I think I'm just reflecting on how it's hard for me to listen to the story, and this is her actual lived experience. So I'm really grateful that she shared her story with us and that we get now the opportunity to learn more about situations like this and just connection and disconnection with our body. Before we do that, though, Beth, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm totally going to cry through this. This is one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast, was to bring stories around connection and body. And so I obviously feel very tender towards this story. Mm. You know, I've been living with a chronic illness for over 12 years. And although my illness is different than hers, I have this like deep ache of knowing when I listen to the story. Her cold morning in January is my Thursday afternoon in May. And it's like when you hear these stories, you have those moments, you know, and often you're living with this internally and you're not necessarily getting the opportunity to talk about it because you're often just like surviving and trying to get through the days, right? So what strikes me about this story is like my illness is what awoke me to the fact that I always lacked connection to my body, whereas she very much had a lovely connection with her body and awareness and a relationship. I never had those moments. And over these past 12 years, I've tried really hard to connect and not default to disassociation. But I, like I said, I know what it's like to exist in survival mode. I know this resignation that you can get to where you don't necessarily have hope for something different. And ultimately, like, I know I'll never be that same person prior to that Thursday afternoon in May. Mm-hmm. The way that she says, estranged but not strangers, I've defined it as like bodily exile. But, you know, it's a privilege to be able to have this conversation today and to share this story. And I'm very, very grateful for the storyteller. And like, this episode is for everyone, for the people who know but have not necessarily named it yet. We see you. We welcome you. We invite you to begin to connect to your body. So this next part of the episode, we are going to bring in a very special guest, someone who I've had the privilege to work with during my own journey and actually first learned of her through a podcast. And we're going to talk about connecting with our bodies today. Jamie Lee Finch is a writer, facilitator, and massage therapist. She is the author of You Are Your Own, A Reckoning with the Religious Trauma of Evangelical Christianity, and the creator of Your Body is a Person, her online course that teaches the foundational principles of creating a loving relationship with your body. Over the years, she's helped thousands of people come to know the wisdom and the care of their bodies through her writing, one-on-one facilitation, workshops, group coaching, and hands-on bodywork. Welcome to Miss Connections, Jamie.
Thank you, Beth. It feels really good to be here, especially to be here with you. It feels full circle in some ways, and I love that.
We're so happy to have you here, Jamie. Obviously, a big topic and a lot to talk about. Before we jump into the macro version of this conversation, we'd love to know, how did you feel listening to this story?
A lot of really complex emotions. Mm-hmm. A lot of grief on behalf of the storyteller and the experience that she's having, but mostly on behalf of the storyteller's body. When we have pain or imbalance in our bodies of unknown origin, the way in which we so understandably turn on them, especially when we're fatigued and it's been so long, and it's hard to maintain hope that you'll ever have clarity or especially anything that resembles healing, it makes so much sense to believe that your body has gone from being an ally to an adversary. And a lot of what I do for a living and have done for a living for 7 years has been holding space for people who are in that season of life and helping to facilitate a different understanding of just how loving their body is continuing to be. And then especially now that I do hands-on body work, I feel on behalf of bodies very often. And so I could just feel as much longing and confusion and grief that the storyteller had for her body. I could feel that from her body back to her. And mm-hmm. it's also just one of the most beautiful pieces of writing I personally have ever heard. It's like clearly right up my alley. I respect it and I ache over it. What an incredible service to bring forth the language for that experience so that, like Beth was saying, so many of us who have had and are having those experiences, someone puts language to it for mm-hmm. us and we have greater understanding because of that and we feel more seen. I mean, I'm astounded by that piece and I have a lot of, you know, grief too.
Yeah, I agree with you. The grief is poignant and beautiful throughout this story. One of the things that I think about, even as she's acknowledging, the storyteller is acknowledging kind of the adversity of that grief, you know, estranged but not strangers. That doesn't mean there's a lack of respect mm-hmm. at the same time. And yeah. so, like, I just want to acknowledge that, like, despite us talking about connecting or the struggles of that kind of interaction in the midst of, like, an illness setting, there can still be respect.
And that's what makes the grief even harder, honestly. Yeah. Like, the way she so beautifully at the end is kind of like those final words of her being like, we're in this together, aren't we? It's almost like this, I can feel from her that she kind of like wrenched herself to be able to say some version of, I still love you. I still respect you. And that, it would be so much easier to write them off completely. And she's not doing that. And that's so... oh, it's so stunning and it's so painful at the same time.
Yeah.
I do want to point out something that is unique about this story from the ones that we've shared previously, which is that this was actually written by our storyteller. So we collaborate really closely with a writer who we'll introduce in a future episode, Charlotte Beach, and she actually edited this story, but our storyteller is a talented writer. And so these are really her words. And so that beautiful piece of writing and the strength to actually go in and not just share, but go into a creative process and tell the story that she has here adds to, I think, the beauty of this story that we're getting to encounter today.
Yeah, you can feel it.
Very much so. Well, we have lots to discuss. I think we should just kind of like go down to the basics in this beginning part of this conversation. Jamie, I'd love to hear from you. What does it mean to connect with your body? What can it look like and what might it feel like?
You know, different people may have different definitions based in different experiences. My definition based in my experience, sure, and also in what I have seen be profoundly transformational and impactful for all the people I've worked with over the years, is built on the foundation of this recognition that your physical body is not an object that you are in ownership of or control over, but they are in fact their own living being. That's why my course is called Your Body is a Person. And when you start recognizing the personhood and therefore agency and personality and most importantly, ability to communicate that your physical body has, everything about the way in which you live in your body starts changing. And so my working definition of connecting with my body or what it means to connect with your body means to recognize their aliveness, recognize that they are an animate living being and that we are in an animate living dance with them. That means two things. Connecting with your body means you have an increased awareness of your somatic experience. Mm-hmm. I would say it also
necessitates a second thing, and that is having an increased literacy in the language that your body is speaking through their somatic state. Mm-hmm. Because you can be aware of the experience you're having, but if you just think that has nothing to do with anything, and you just think that's, I don't know, the temperature the thermostat is set at today, as opposed to someone telling you something, you're going to have a totally different experience of connection. Mm-hmm. And when you understand that every way in which you are feeling, whether acute or chronic, is someone telling you something, the whole way in which you decide to move towards figuring out what is being said changes. Because it goes from a, I need to fix this and make it disappear model, which is largely what like Western medicine is built upon, not to even vilify it. I think the primary motivation of that is like love, because we want people to feel better.
Yeah.
But it is not that simple. And throughout most of human history, people who were trusted with the responsibility of caring for bodies understood that it is not that simple. They also understood the animate nature of the body. Luckily, this idea of, hey, your body's talking to you about something they need you to know, aka acute and chronic things happening in your body have underlying, you know, energetic, emotional causes that used to be considered very woo. Luckily, Western science is catching up with like ancient wisdom, which is like, no, no, your body is the place where your all of your life experiences have been collected. Mm-hmm. Your body is the place where everything that has ever happened to you. And a really brilliant survival strategy of being a human person is to learn how to leave when you're experiencing overwhelming events that you do not know how to process yet. Well, those get coded here in the literal physical and psychological patterning of the body. Thinking about the moment mentioned in the letter of like not understanding that there was seemingly no cause. There was like no, and even to say like, you know, there was no trauma. And I understand what's meant by that completely. And I think to be really connected with your body really does mean coming into this like commitment to believing that they never do anything for no reason. Mm-hmm. They never do anything for no reason. And there are some things that we just may not be alive long enough to find out what those reasons are, aka things being fixed, healed, whatever. I can't explain that and I can't make that better. But what I do know about bodies is that there is never no reason for what they are doing. And that's why conceptualizing of embodiment as a relationship changes everything and matters so much, because then it's not a project that you have to complete solo or you fail at something. It is a person you are learning how to speak the language of and have dialogue fluently with consistently. So that to me is what being connected with your body looks like. And as far as what it feels like, I think it feels like vitality. And I think vitality looks different for every person based on their circumstances, their privilege, like their ability versus disability. There is no cookie cutter blueprint for vitality and aliveness. It is whatever vitality and aliveness means for you. And that to me is wholeness. And that is ultimately healing.
That is such a helpful way to think about connection with your body, because I think what I expected you to say was, it feels like when you're sitting there and, you know, you can feel the tingle up your arm or whatever, like it's really tangible feelings definition in terms of how it would sit in your body. But to hear you describe it as an acknowledgement of your body as its own entity and a commitment to believing, if I'm paraphrasing correctly, what your body is communicating, regardless of whether or not you can totally decipher what that means at this time, based on the resources that you have. And do you want to clarify anything that I said?
That was a great way to put it. I would say even to even further simplify, because I've gotten really good at simplifying this language over the years, but just like being committed to the belief that they are a person and they love you.
Mm-hmm.
And that everything they are ever doing is in an effort to make you well. I've actually started working with more doctors lately
because there are quite a few physicians that are starting to see like this approach is, one of them said, the future of medicine. And I was like, oof, okay, great. I'll take it.
And I think a differentiation that I'm hearing that's really helpful to note is that a connection with your body does not require a complete understanding of what your body is communicating. And I think that that idea is important to dispel, because it can feel like if I don't know what you're saying and I can't figure out how to get the resources to fix you based on you communicating with me, then I'm not connected with you. Yeah. You're seeing that there's opportunity in between those two things.
Yeah, just like in any relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't need to completely understand something someone else does in order to love them and be in relationship with them. I'd say a similar thing with the body would be like, I don't need her to like resolve all of her issues in order for me to be willing to love her. Like, what would it look like, feel like for me to decide to love her anyway?
I mean, with this lens, I feel that people who hear the most important relationship that you have is with yourself, and loving yourself and self-care takes it to a depth that is bastardized all the time through commodification and capitalism, in that like, oh, you need this product in order to implement self-care. But really, like, self-care is a radical act in asking yourself, asking your body, what are you saying to me today? Why are you reacting this way? How can I listen to you better? How can I connect with you? And, you know, I say this from a place of like, I struggle with this so much. Yeah. But at the same time, just knowing that foundational truth helps me, you know, continue every day and still work to connect with my body and be committed to that. Because I do feel like when you're committed to your body and you see them as a person, then it will trickle into your everyday relationships with other humans as well.
Yeah. In hearing you describe that kind of definition of self-care as really just learning how to pay deep attention to the experience you are actually having, to like the experience your physical body is actually having in the present moment, it can feel frustrating for people sometimes when they kind of first start out on that journey and they're like, I'm not hearing anything.
Yeah.
And again, I hold space for this for a living. So like I'm walking people through kind of that first phase, and often it is like, I'm not hearing anything, so they must not be speaking. Or the deeper shame story of like, I must be doing it wrong, or maybe my body just doesn't like me and doesn't want to talk to me, or I got a broken one or something. And I think this relational framing can really help with that part, because this is a literacy. And after so many years of feeling disconnected from our bodies, kind of like, let's put it in, you know, parallel of any other relationship, to reunite with someone you haven't seen in a long time, or to maybe meet someone for the very first time, kind of like you were saying, Beth, like when people are starting on the journey of embodiment for the first time, it can feel like you're getting acquainted with this stranger. And to expect total fluency and total intimacy quickly is to deeply misunderstand the nature of relationship and vulnerability and trust. That's hard. That's a hard thing to tell people. That's a hard thing to say now. It's especially a hard thing when I am talking to people who have lived for a very long time with chronic conditions and chronic states.
And I think we're starting from a place of understanding that disconnection exists. Mm-hmm. And we've heard one story from the storyteller of chronic pain and where that disconnection started. I also think for the storyteller's benefit that she does have a connection with her body. It's a frustrating relationship where there are no answers, but that, you know, she says in her story that her body used to take her on adventures and now it guides her to the couch to rest. Yeah. And that is a relationship that is frustrating but is working to a certain extent. So I just want to note that for just, you know, obviously the storyteller has been on this journey for a long time and has learned those things throughout this journey. And then we've heard obviously Beth sharing your story of chronic illness and the journey that that sent you on. I'm wondering, Jamie, what are more reasons that people might come to this conversation or listening to this conversation, noticing that they're feeling disconnected from their bodies? What have you found in your work with clients over the years that can be the cause of that disconnection?
Being alive.
Existing. There you have it.
Existing here, trying to exist as a wholehearted being amongst other people. Most of us had parents who loved us to the best of their ability, but did not receive a lot of what they needed when they were young and did not have the cultural permission for things like therapy and self-help. Like, this is our consciousness as a species has like kind of shot up in the last like 40 years as far as our permission to understand what's going on here. And so I feel like there is this widening gap for those of us who are this age having these conversations where we were not given very many of the tools to know how to be in and stay in our bodies when experiencing really hard things. And that is the nature of any disconnection, dissociation from the body, is not knowing how to stay here. And so brilliantly, strategically, you leave. I think that most of us learned how to get along pretty successfully doing that for many, many years in our developmental years. And now we just call that our personality. Mm. And I notice this in myself too, where there'll be things that'll come up and I'll think there's no overt, obvious, you know, reason or cause for what I'm feeling in my body. And what I've really come to realize about her and who she is and my experience with her is that, like, because we are in this dance together, we are communicating things to each other constantly. And she is constantly absorbing the truth of my lived experience. So the thing that makes me slightly jump for a second, if I don't move that energy out of my body, it stays there. It gets stuck there. The extremely overwhelming emotional event, if I shove that down and I don't release it, it stays in my body. And that starts to create imbalance in the body over time. And your body loves you. And so they're not going to not tell you about that. That's where a lot of symptoms can come from, is from those underlying emotional causes. And trauma doesn't have to be like an enormous thing that happened to you this one time. It also doesn't have to look like prolonged abuse in childhood. It can just look like consistently not getting your needs met and then developing a somatic memory and belief that you will not get those needs met, and then orienting to move and live that way through the world. These things become holding patterns in our literal physical bodies. And I think it also is just becoming increasingly harder to be like a well person in a well body, because our nervous systems are severely overstimulated and overwhelmed in the way that modern life functions. Our nervous systems just like don't know what to do with all these screens and all these notifications and all these alerts and all these things that are constantly getting our attention. Those things are activating our bodies. And so they are in states of unprecedented chronic stress.
Also, we've lived through an unprecedented event.
Yes.
We are watching really catastrophic, horrific things happening in this moment now. And so there's, like you said, that steady drumbeat of stress that's based on even a privileged person navigating the world, let alone, you know, additional stress factors based on your circumstance. And the combination of those things, I have to imagine, just exacerbates that cycle.
Very much. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because even though we've worked together in the past, you know, I arrived to different words on my own prior to it. But then just hearing you talk, I'm like, oh, yeah, because one of my things that I had to reframe in my illness journey was that I'm working towards wholeness, not healing, because I felt like healing was very lacking in describing what I'm experiencing and what me and my body deserves.
Yeah.
But the other thing in this awakening and recognizing like I'm in relationship with my body, I need to connect. Prior to having that language, I was on a journey of what is the meaning of life kind of situation. And I ended up developing what I consider my own kind of like ethic of living. Mm-hmm. And the ethic is breathing.
Yeah.
I personally really, truly believe that breathing is a radical act. And mm-hmm. every time we breathe, it's beautiful. It's complicated, but also, you know, like it's led me to be careful or to be intentional on how I spend my time breathing. Mm-hmm. Not to say it's perfect all the time, but at least, you know, like I could recenter myself, reground myself, and just remind myself like the beauty of breathing right now and the beauty of that like relationship actually with your body. You cannot breathe unless you have your body, right? And so again, there's that deep connection on the importance of like your relationship with your body, that communion and learning that for the rest of the time that you're breathing.
Mm-hmm. And there are physiological things that we have to acknowledge and talk about when it comes to the breath. And we do not have time, nor should we unpack all of those things. But what I will say is that bringing intentionality to your breath helps you activate your parasympathetic nervous system, mm-hmm. which helps regulate that nervous system, which sends the signal to your body that they're safe. In this present moment, in this breath that I am taking, you are safe. And what mm-hmm. that does for the way your nervous system informs the other 12 systems of your body is vitally necessary. So I loved hearing you say like, you can't breathe without your body. And it's just like, they can't be your body without your breath. Mm-hmm. Like there is an automatic process of shallow breathing that will happen, but the intentional diaphragmatic breathing that needs to happen to signal what needs to be signaled to the vagus nerve, all of that, our bodies need us to do that, like they need our conscious participation in order to breathe in the way that best resources them. So again, there's that dance. It's like they need us and we need them.
You know, the storyteller has communicated very beautifully in this retelling of their experience that sometimes you get to a point where you are like, okay, we're not the same. We're still together, but we're not the same. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's really hard to connect with you because of the pain that I'm experiencing or the symptom that I deal with or the multi-layers of all of that on top of stress and bills to pay and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm so curious, how do you work with clients on how to connect with their bodies while knowing their chronic pain may never leave? They may have an illness for the rest of their life.
Well, grief is, I mean, learning how to feel everything. That is the formula for being a human person. Like, I know we love to think that there's no right way to be a person, but there is a right way to be in a body objectively, and it is learning how to feel everything. Everything beyond that is super subjective, but if you cannot or do not learn how to feel everything, your body is not going to be resourced in the way that they need to be resourced. And that is so difficult to learn how to do, and it's the only path of aliveness. I think it's important to note that pain and illness is not like the source, even though it feels that way when we have pain and illness, it is not the source of the disconnection. It is actually the symptom of whatever is going on that is the actual disconnection. As you know, the title of that very famous book, The Body Keeps the Score, like they're knowing something, they're remembering something. I found my way to doing this work because I have had a complicated body since the day I got here with her. Mm-hmm. And learning first and now teaching that this expression of imbalance or what's going on in the body is actually your body's attempt to have a conversation with you. And again, that conversation, it's hard to learn the language they speak. It can take a while. It can take a long time. And very often we need people who can support us in that journey. Now that I've started working with a lot of physicians, I've started to realize just how many of those physicians are ready to say, like, we're not actually as equipped as people think we are. And then they're under like unprecedented amounts of chronic stress for that reason and 1,000 others because of the demands put on them. So like having a body is having a body is having a body, regardless of the identity you hold, if you're the doctor or if you are the person occupying the role of patient. I think there is something that is so incredibly helpful and transformational about committing to unlearning this paradigm of the pain being the problem and committing to relearning this practice of belief in the goodness of our bodies, that they actually are really good at their jobs. Like, it's funny to think that, again, a lot of kind of like healing spaces, whether that's Western or otherwise, kind of come at embodiment with this framing as if like we need to convince them that being well is a good idea. So we need to like biohack or like figure out in some way, like how can we do their job for them because they're just apparently not good at it. And it's like, what a weird, what a ridiculous premise. Like, she is better at being a body than me. It's literally her job. So to believe that I have to convince her that well-being is a good idea is wild. The beautiful thing is that I have seen for a lot of people some chronic conditions, chronic pain lessen, start to alleviate, maybe even totally disappear. But that's not the point. And that's what's so interesting about this is I think that because that stops being the point, the person relaxes into the experience they're actually really having and relaxes into this is a relationship I'm actually in. Another thing I'll say is what's so interesting in you naming and the storyteller naming this like grief of when you have a complicated body, there are moments where you just surrender to, and I think that's actually the wisdom, is to learn to surrender to who this person is now, as opposed to who we're clinging to, who we wish they still were. And that comes for all of us eventually, yeah, is the thing. Those of us who live in complicated, complex, non-normative bodies, that comes for us earlier. This is a big reason why these bodies are marginalized, is because our culture does not want to look at our own mortality. We don't want to look at the temporal nature of this existence. And our bodies are telling the truth about that constantly. Yeah. So no wonder we want to objectify them. No wonder we want to disconnect from them. And no wonder we want to shove out of sight, out of mind, anyone who is having a complicated time in their body in front of us. But it comes for all of, she is going to die. Mm-hmm. I'm 35. There are already ways and patterns and movements and expressions of knowing her that are so different than, you know, even as recent as like 5-10 years ago, much less in my, you know, adolescent years. And I could either frustratingly cling to an assumption that she should obey me and be different than she is, or I can surrender to exactly who she is and find loving relationship with her right now. And that is the whole way in which I approach the work I do, whether it's someone with a currently complicated body or a seemingly uncomplicated body that is still going to age and die. It is all the same, the experience of being in a body.
It's funny, I have on my little sticky note where I'm keeping notes, it just says aging. Next to it, by the way, it says panicked. I don't remember at what point I was feeling panicked.
Are there underlines under panicked too? Really panicked. Very, very panicked.
But I think I feel very squarely in the middle of a moment of reconciling with the understanding of who my body is. Mm-hmm. What my body can do and can't do and why. And I think there's a million different answers out in the world. Mm-hmm. You mentioned biohacking, but there's a million different ways that the internet and the people who have, you know, made a living off of selling a very prescriptive advice for your body that are really selling how to have that ownership over your body that you mentioned, and how to make your body what you want it to be based on what our society and culture has decided it should be. Mm-hmm. And I think that the layers involved in that are so complicated. Mm-hmm. My experiences currently is really sitting with the reckoning that is coming after, you know, I would say maybe 8 years of pretty intense stress and the physical fallout that has come from that, where, you know, my body that played college soccer can't go on a run without getting sick. So I think that we encounter a disconnect that feels personal, while also for me that feels in conflict with culture. It feels in conflict with what the world expects from me. And so just trying to like peel back the layers of even the context that we each have for our bodies is, it feels kind of impossible, let alone the actual experience that you're feeling in that relationship. So I do think I'm very glad that you mentioned just that, you know, this does come for all of us in any way, shape, or form now or later. And I do think there is an early wisdom that you're mentioning that Beth has, you know, done the work to find, that you have done the work to find, that our storyteller has done the work to find, that is that we aren't in control.
Yeah.
And maybe we don't need to be. Maybe that's not what it's about.
Yeah. I mean, let's go back to grief again. It's just like, if this comes for us all, like nobody gets off this ride alive because you need to have a body for that and they will die. Unless we start feeling the reality of that, like really feeling the grief of that and acknowledging it, it's going to come out sideways. And that might come out sideways through snapping at someone when you didn't mean to, or it could come out sideways as being expressed by your body as some kind of pain or imbalance or 100 other ways. Like, nothing is a zero sum game in the experience of like having a body. Like, there, I'm just gonna say it again, the body keeps the score of everything that happens. We are meant to live with grief in some degree, because living with grief means we are acknowledging that this present moment is passing. And we are not a culture that really enjoys experiencing and embodying grief. And so we think we, you know, got to get out of jail free card for that. And no, our bodies are keeping the score of our resistance to feel the grief and then to move through those emotional processes so that we can be fully present.
Maybe that's when I wrote panicked. No, I'm just kidding.
It's when you have thought that you're like, I'm gonna die.
I'm not young anymore. No, it is funny because I think a lot about aging, and I would say I look back a lot at like my 20s and the things that my body was able to do while also carrying so much that was hard.
Yeah.
And I think that while my body doesn't run marathons or do triathlons or whatever at this moment, I wouldn't take my 20s back if you gave me $1 million.
Same.
I fucking love 35.
Yes, me too.
I love it so much. And I think that, you know, that's what makes it so complicated too, is because the expectations on our bodies are maybe not even rooted in our hopes for our bodies or our hope for ourselves. The actual lived experience of fulfillment, enjoyment, joy, all of those things, they don't necessarily always look the way that that idealized version was packaged and sold to us. But that is some of the work as well, is sitting with grieving that fantasy that we maybe won't have, but cherishing and acknowledging the work that we've put in for the real life version that we actually get to have today. And I think that that split is hard work to manage, but it is certainly for me in this moment, at least, very much a part of my day-to-day life.
You know, we've said this throughout our entire discussion, and I just feel like I want to be overt about it again and again to help people. But like, how beautiful is acceptance mm-hmm. when it comes to connection and mm-hmm. relationship, to radically accept yeah. where you're at with your body and then learn how to communicate with her, him, they, however you name your body mm-hmm. is such a profound act of love. And what an interesting transitional period we are in right now. Like, I think mm-hmm. it's somewhat a little bit unique to us millennials mm-hmm. to be witnessing this transitioning, living out that transition and having hope for like the younger generation who are doing so much better in working to make systematic changes to which our bodies can actually thrive and live well and be able to flourish. And at the same time, like, I can't help but think about, and I'm being very specific, the multimillionaire that is trying to be 18 in a 45-year-old body who's literally, like you said, biohacking. Still this, like, obtainable fountain of youth ideal that's mm-hmm. kind of, like, above us. And we're kind of, like, in this mismatch of it all. I don't really have a well-formed thought outside of that. I just have to acknowledge like mm-hmm. what a weird and interesting transitional space that we get to experience and witness. Mm-hmm. And like if we can accept, what is that going to be for us if we choose to accept and come into communion with our bodies in that acceptance yeah. and in this space?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a fascinating moment to be alive for. I have that thought like daily. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the most fascinating moments for bodies, just because, like I said, our consciousness and the permission for the development of our consciousness has just like accelerated in the past few decades. And that's wonderful. And also that I think has caused us to start to create some infrastructures and systems around ways of being that are actually really unsustainable for our physicality. And because like the younger generation is like has the ability to create systems and structures that are more like equitable and just for bodies and that promoting the well-being of bodies, it makes me excited too. And I also think about the impact on the development of the nervous system and bodies of that younger generation because they have been using screens and have been severely overstimulated sure. and lived through a global pandemic where they had an unprecedented physical separation during their primary developmental years. And
yeah.
so I'm like, it's both, right?
Yeah.
And then also then we have these billionaires like trying to transcend their bodies and when they could just feel their feelings. Like, it's not that simple, but kind of like, they're not unique. They are human. Like the rest sure. of us, we all also try to not feel our feelings. We just have less capital and we do it differently. And so mm-hmm. I don't really have a way to wrap that either. I'm just also acknowledging with you, like what a fascinating moment to try and come into understanding and loving relationship with a body right now mm-hmm. in the human In human history. What a fascinating moment for that.
Yeah.
One last question before we wrap things up, Jamie. I know we could actually talk to you forever about this. speaking of coming into a loving relationship with our bodies, obviously, as we have covered over and over again in this conversation, that is a journey. Mm-hmm. But for our listeners who are hearing this conversation and have the desire to take the first step, mm-hmm. what would you say are like a couple things that someone could start to do to begin that journey with their body?
The first step for me and any advice I ever give is going to be the same thing forever, which is acknowledging the personhood of your body. That doesn't just mean like a conceptual acknowledgement or awareness. It also means changing your language around the way you speak to and about your physical body. So a core principle in the work I do of personified embodiment is teaching people how to, it might sound weird, but like habitually train themselves to refer to their body as a he, she, or they instead of using the word it. It changes the entire dynamic that you have with your own physicality completely when you start to change your language. Changing your language does change your brain in a very real sense. And then that changes your actions and behaviors and choices. I think like there's like a really necessary second part, like second step to that as well, which is not just acknowledging that they are a person and beginning to work with that framing to build relationship with that person, but also a core foundational ethic of that relationship with that person is giving them the most generous assumption about what is happening and doing it over and over and over and over, never stopping. Don Miguel Ruiz's work, The Four Agreements, is like just like the most perfectly encapsulated description of loving behavior and loving relationship that I can think of. And it was written from the perspective of coming into loving relationship with other human beings. But hey, if your body's a person, they are a human being and the same principles apply. One of the four agreements is like, take nothing personally. And that sounds great when you do it the first time, maybe, and it's hard, but it like pays off and it feels good. And then like doing it again and then again and then again, because I'm moving into a life season of parenting, I've been calling everything that requires me to respond with an embodiment of love in the direction of it, I'm calling all of it parent practice. Because it is that, it is taking nothing personally over and over and over and always giving the most generous assumption over and over and over. And I recognize completely how complicated this is and how complicated this sounds and is for people who live in complicated bodies. I have been there. I do understand that. And that is just the way of love. That is the way of being in love. And I think that to get really simple and physiological about it, I do think both of those things are easier to do when you're bringing awareness to your breath. Mm-hmm. That's a really simple, most accessible I could ever think of embodiment practice is bringing awareness to your breath, conscious breathing, because again, it signals the presence of safety to your body. There's so much more that then builds off of that, which is why I created my course to have just like a comprehensive 101 entry level. Here are some foundational ways of living and moving and experiencing your body that can help facilitate greater understanding and more well-being. But I would say that those seemingly simple shifts are really profound things and can totally change your life just from acknowledging the personhood of your body and then just like believing that they love you and being committed to that belief no matter what.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I just want to thank the storyteller and their body for sharing their story today. And I just want to thank you, Jamie, and your body for coming and speaking to us and being on this podcast. And Lizzie, I just want to thank you and your body for being here and doing this work with me in conversation so that we can help others and ourselves create better connections. And I'm just going to thank my body today for being yes. here because she needed to hear all this stuff again today. And so, yeah, I'm just very thankful. But listeners, be sure to follow Jamie on Instagram at Jamie Lee Finch, and you can visit her website at jamieleefinch.com to explore all the great things Jamie is working on, the specific links to Jamie's course, book, Substack, membership space is going to be in our show notes. So if something really resonated with you today, we highly encourage you to seek out those resources. And I know from personal experience that it is very beneficial and, you know, it'll open a new world to you. So please take care of yourself and your body today.
We want to end this episode by hearing from our amazing storyteller again. We asked her what she thought she missed from this misconnection. She said, "The misconnection interrupted the path I was on. It created a diversion that redirected everything. Until that point, my life had followed a pretty straight line. Because of what has happened, I missed one version of my life, the version I had been working towards and planning on."
We also believe that for every misconnection, there can be something gained. Our storyteller said, "I've gained a better understanding of agency. I better understand what falls under my own agency, as well as what is beyond my control."
And we don't normally do this, but our storyteller, who wrote this story herself, has actually written a book about her experience. The book is called The Body Alone, A Lyrical Articulation of Chronic Pain, and it's written by Nina Lohman. Nina, we're so grateful for you sharing your story, and we're really excited to read your book. If you're interested in learning more about Nina's book and pre-ordering, go to the show notes.
This is Misconnections. Thanks for listening. I'm Elizabeth Windham.
And I'm Elizabeth Villa. Special thanks to this week's guest, Jamie Lee Finch, and our truly amazing storyteller. You know who you are.
This episode's story essay was written and recorded by our storyteller. It was edited by Charlotte Beach.
Misconnections is co-hosted, produced, and edited by us, the Elizabeths, Elizabeth Villa and Elizabeth Windham. Our theme music is Feeling by Danielle Musto.
Have a misconnection story to share with us? Email us at elizabeths@missedconnectionspod.com. And please follow, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube.